Welcome to the Grappling Grappling Rewind Podcast.
Welcome to this week on the Grappling Rewind Podcast. In this week's show, we're going to recap Fight to Win 115 in Seattle, Washington. We are going to talk a little about Masvidal versus Pettis. We are going to talk about the UAE JJF King of Mats, the heavyweights. We're going to talk in the preview section. We're going to talk about Rise 7, Third Coast Grappling 3, the Midwest Finishers 2, the welterweights, Fight to Win 116 in Richmond, California, Men of War 6, King of the Mats, and SAGC at College Park that Emil and I and Josh are doing commentary for. As always, I'm your host, Maine, joined with my co-host,
Emil.
There's more events on this week's show than I think we've ever had before.
Oh, yeah, we back, man. We back.
We back. Yeah, thanks, Worlds. They give us, like, a break. But Worlds doesn't need a break. It's just there's one event, but, like, 40 hours to watch. Now we have, I want to say, like, 10 events. Again, some of these previews will be a little abbreviated because of just how many events we're covering. But strap in, it's going to be a really great episode. I'm really excited to talk about a bunch of these events. We have really actually good previews this week as opposed to usual. But before we do any of that, I got some news. Mackenzie Dern had a baby.
Sweet. Congratulations.
Next news item. We've done an interview with Ryan McGuire of the Third Coast Grappling. That's actually going to be at the end of this show. We're going to try some more interview stuff out. We're not becoming an interview show, but I want to talk to promoters and like guys on the headlining of cards. So we're going to start to do a little more of that. I think we have a really good interview at the end of the show. Listen to it. We're going to do it after the preview of Third Coast. So we're going to start trying this out for guys that really I want to talk to.
Yeah, and I feel like it's a great format too because there's no one that can inform you better about like the talent, the rule sets, everything than the promoters themselves, right? So
yeah.
Like, you know, sometimes you and I are like digging through trying to piece things together. Promoters have everything there, so I feel like
this thing.
Yep.
Like, so I asked Ryan a bunch of questions about his event and about like their rule set and how they chose it. And it's actually like I think it's an insightful interview, so I'm happy about it. It's real short. We're gonna keep all the interviews on the show really short. They're not gonna go into the long form interviews. There are many other podcasts that do that much better than we do in a more interesting way. Speaking of that, our buddy Alex Viana is on the Grappler Union this week.
Hell yeah.
He has his own episode now because he was on with his professor and another high-level black belt last week, but it's just him this week, and I'm excited because I find him hilarious.
Glad to have another talking head. Congratulations, Alex.
Yep. So in other news, Hanger and Keenan started a podcast as well.
Everyone's fucking doing a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Matt Byrne podcast. I think the first episode is out with him and Keenan. They do some breakdowns. It's actually really cool. Both those guys are super, super high level, multiple time Nogi world champions on both of them. I think placed on ADCC. Keenan's done that a couple times. Hanger's qualified like two dudes you want to hear talk about jiu-jitsu that are at the current highest level there is.
And know like the ins and outs of like the meta game right now.
And everything.
Yeah.
And they've been successful for years and years and years. So it's like that is if you're interested in stuff that we talk about, they are guys to listen to as well. Let's see. Another news. By the time this comes out, it will be the last day for the patch contest. If you want to win a Grappling Rewind patch, find out how to do so on Instagram. That's that. In other news, Rodolfo Vieira got signed to the UFC.
Woo! Oh, damn. What weight is he fighting at? Do we know?
I did not expect a follow-up question, Emil. My note says he got signed to the UFC. No, it says Rodolfo. Not even his first name. Just Rodolfo, of last name, signed to the UFC.
Damn.
I didn't do my research.
I wonder if he's
going
to be like welterweight or
no,
middleweight?
I think he's like 85 or 205.
So middleweight.
He's a big dude. Yeah, he's a big dude. He's light heavyweight and middleweight. But I think he's 5-0 now.
But we've seen those motherfuckers cut down to like, you know, welter.
Yeah, but I don't think he's making welter. Like he is a brick shithouse of a human being.
Yeah.
So that's exciting because we're gonna see him fight like super legit guys. I think the last guy he subbed was actually like a legit grappler too. So, you know, more legit guys coming over to an organization that makes them easier to cover. So that's awesome. Malachi got his black belt from TLI.
Hell yeah.
Only 6 months after whooping my ass at a Naga. So I'm happy that I got beat by basically a black belt.
There you go.
It counts in my last match before blowing my knee out. Good times, Emil. Let's see what else. All the Kasai Pro 6 qualifiers are out now. They've run all four of the qualifying events. I don't have a name list in front of me, but highly recommend go through and look at those. I love that Kasai runs qualifiers, and they've run basically four separate qualifiers in four separate locations to get onto their event, so there is no excuse if you were at that weight and you didn't make it, you had your chance. All right, so that does it for news. On to the next. So on to our recap of the UAE JJF King of Mats in Moscow. Russia is getting it done this weekend. They ran this one before the Grand Slam, which I don't Did they usually do that? I thought it was usually on the second day, not the first
day. Yeah, it usually is. So that's an unusual order.
Well, that explains why Kanan wasn't in the arena during his first match.
But yeah, so basically the way that this works is UAE JJF will have Grand Slams, and then in the same weekend they will have a invited tournament of 10 people within a weight class.
People were not within a weight class for this one.
Well,
though.
Okay, so this usually. Is ostensibly heavyweight. And then the 10 people get split off into two groups of five. Those two groups of five round robin within the group, and then the top two people come out to form semifinals, and then onwards to finals and a
it's
champion.
Awesome.
It's fucking great. It's 6-minute matches. As I've talked, I won't talk your ear off anymore about how much I fucking love that. And it's very exciting again because like everyone faces each other, so there's no questions as to bracketing or any shit like that.
Who's the better guy on the day? It's just like, yeah, you faced everyone in your side of the bracket, so we saw
this particular King of Mats was fucking stacked. So in Group A, the number one person coming out of the round robin was Joao Gabriel Rocha with a record of 3-1 in terms of matches won and lost. Number two is Kanan Duarte with 2-2. He actually lost one of his matches on a forfeit because he wasn't in the stadium, which is like, what? Like,
how? Like, when's the last time we've seen a guy like on a professional stage like this be DQ'd for not being in the arena
with
at the right
money
time?
On the line? You know,
I think I want to say Erberth had this happen to him as well on another event. It might have been another King of Mats, but I think. I feel like we've seen this one other time since we've been covering King of Mats, but it's super rare. It was just really funny. The results, like, wait, where was the other? Why is he 2-2? Oh, he got DQ'd for not being there.
Yeah. So Kanan had a tiebreaker against Jackson Souza, who is also 2-2. We had Igor Silva with 1-3 and Gerard Lubinsky 1-3. And
that's
so
just Group A.
Joao Gabriel and Kanan progress into the semifinals. And Group B, Hudson Mateus comes out number one, 3-1 with a submission tiebreaker over Jonatus Gracie. Number two is Jonatus Gracie, also 3-1. Ricardo Evangelista, 2-2. Adam Wardzinski, 2-2. Dong Hua Choi, 0-4. So Hudson Mateus and Jonatus Gracie progress into the semifinals. So I'm going to talk about just a couple of the matches from the round robins that were really exciting. So fucking Kanan Duarte subs Joao Gabriel Rocha. By
a
guillotine choke.
In the gi, which is a super rare choke to see.
While he was behind on points.
Yeah.
Which is just fucking awesome.
Dude, this whole match was just great back and forth.
And Main pointed it out, like, there's a fucking huge size difference.
There's one moment where Xiao Gabriel gets behind Kanan after the restart.
Yeah.
After the restart, right? Yeah, after the restart. Immediately.
Body locks him and just throws him like a sack of potatoes.
Like a kid. And you look at the difference, like, Xiao Gabriel just lifts him up from behind and just, like just drops him down. And you're like, damn. It's the same takedown that Lovato hit on Fight to Win. It's in his highlight every time he fights for Fight to Win. He just drops someone on their face. But you watch, you're like, oh, Xiao Gabriel is massive compared to Duarte. Duarte is a big guy, too, but Xiao Gabriel is, like, Buchecha-sized.
Yeah, and Xiao Gabriel's, like, very versatile. In fact, in the first seconds of the match, he hits a foot sweep on Kanan. And
when the camera angle is still far out.
Yeah, they have the zoom, the panned out camera angle to get like the cinematic view of, you know, the match as the fighters are coming in and you get to see the audience. And the foot sweep happens before the camera can get in.
It reminds me of when Verdum flying kicked Travis Brown in the face, where you had to catch on a replay because basically the camera was still zoomed in and it wasn't on the fighters, and Verdum just runs across the mat and flying kicks him in the face. And it was like, wait, what? Did he just fucking do that? And when the round was over, they replayed it because they had the wrong camera angle at the time. I was like, yeah, he just fucking did that. It was the same thing where it's like, did he just fucking take him down?
Yeah, so, you know, in the first seconds, Joao Gabriel's on top. And Kanan, eventually, after like a minute or so, answers with a rocking 50-50 sweep, so Kanan is now on top. And it's a battle for a while. Kanan ends up going for a toe hold, and it's a little loose, and Joao capitalizes off of the space and escapes, and they scramble and get to a kind of like standing position with Joao Gabriel like on the back in the body lock position. They get reset, and then what Main just described happens, where Joao Gabriel just fucking throws Kanan.
Just
like,
lifts and just dumps.
So, you know, Kanan's back and he dumps him, and then Joao gets on the back, and Kanan starts standing up, and so Joao Gabriel's in a standing back
He gets the hooks in, too.
He gets the points from standing back. And he's, like, trying to choke the shit out of Kanan. And Kanan's battling the feet. He's not even, like, paying attention to the
choke. I thought that was really gangster.
Yeah.
Because you see Kanan, like, and Jirao was on the face still in a big way, but Jirao is significant, not, maybe not significantly bigger than Kanan, but, like, definitely a bit bigger than Kanan in a noticeable way. And Kanan just kind of has his face tucked, and he's, like, fucking with the feet. And he's like, yo, he's not going to address the choke at all. But to Kanan's credit, he knocks one of the feet off. Zhao Gabriel kind of has to adjust to kind of a sideways position.
And he gets reversed. And so Kanan ends up being inside of Zhao Gabriel's full guard.
And then they get back to the ground.
And they get back to the ground, and Kanan hits a fucking dope Toriando pass. And then they just inexplicably stop the fucking match as he's passed Zhao Gabriel's guard.
That was the weirdest restart. Because it looks like, what it looked like to me is that the ref had basically stopped the match because the timer, the mat side timer wasn't running, which is what I think what happened. But like Kanan beautifully, like one of the most fluid passes I've ever seen him hit on like a top guy, just around the legs, and they just like stop the match and they don't give him the points.
They don't give him the point. Like it was, it's inexplicable. Like I'm frustrated.
They weren't even off the mat. It was like the timer wasn't running, so they stopped the match and then didn't give the points. But doesn't really matter at the end of the match.
Right. So, Kanan is just doing his, like, fucking badass passing, and, Joao is able to scramble. He gets to a seated double leg, like, basically double leg takedown position, but he keeps his head out, and...
No, but it's before this. He's basically, on the butterfly sweep, Joao's trying to get around the legs, and he almost gets over, and Kanan's able to get underneath him and sweep him over with the butterfly.
You're thinking of the Jonathan Gracie match.
I'm thinking of the wrong match, man.
Yeah. But Joao Gabriel kind of like escapes, goes seated, and he's like, he's in a seated guard briefly, and he grabs the legs, and he grabs like a double leg, and he starts like just trucking forward. And Kanan does what Kanan does, which is he fucking slaps on that monster fucking guillotine.
Dude, it was really impressive because the angle for the camera here, you couldn't even tell. And the commentary staff didn't even address it. They didn't even see it. And then all of a sudden, like, the ref calls the match, and the commentator's like, oh, shit, he got a guillotine.
Yeah, exactly. It was just, it was quick and
I would love to see another angle of the finish there because, like, we kind of had a high angle finish, and you really couldn't see, like, because he tapped him relatively quickly with the guillotine, too. So I'm, like, curious. He did a lot of adjustments with the legs and kind of walked up the body. He went from trapping the far side leg on the guillotine side, and then he kind of walks up his leg to trap behind the back to stop the rollover from Zhao Gabriel, and which is kind of what you do when you have a guillotine, but you just really, you couldn't tell that he was doing it from the angle. It was just beautiful technique.
Yeah,
we don't see Zhao Gabriel get tapped very frequently at all, and that's very, very evident in an earlier match that happened with him.
So it's just fucking awesome. Like, for Kanan to win from behind like that was fucking dope.
And to sub.
Yeah.
Like, to win with sub over Zhao Gabriel, who was, like, one of the front runners to take it against Bushesha this year for the Worlds.
Right.
And he got food poisoning, so we didn't get to see it.
So the next round-robin match that I want to talk about is Ricardo Evangelista versus Hudson Mateus. So Ricardo subs Hudson by toe hold. This is a double jumping guard. Ricardo gets Ashigarami and does a phenomenal job of basically offsetting Hudson, like pushing him forward.
Just like off-balancing.
Off-balancing him. Like, because I was trying to figure this out because I was watching it. And to me, the first time I watched it real time, it looked like Hudson was trying to do a running man escape from an Ashigarami. And I was like,
yeah.
Why is he doing it? I was like, there's no heel hook there. That's a weird...
It's a weird way to address the position.
Right, exactly. And then I looked and I was like, oh, no, he wasn't doing a running escape. Like, Ricardo just fucking threw him that well that he, like, turned him. And then, you know, as Hudson's, like, was facing away, his foot was just in a prime position to just grab it and, like, slam, as Josh says, you know, put the toes in the butt. And just instantaneous tap. Yeah. Like, not even fucking
dude, when
close.
That leg, when the leg gets turned wrong in those transitional positions with the toe hold, like, there's those transitional toe holds, I think, are the scariest things.
They are, because you're not flexing your muscles to
and
resist.
And you're facing the other way.
Yeah.
And so for heel hooks, like, you really, it's hard to get heel hooked facing, like, the wrong way. Like, you kind of, like, you know a heel hook's coming. A toe hold can go from, like, you're not in it, to, like, you're facing the wrong direction away from your opponent, and you're tapping because they've turned your foot.
Right.
They're terrifying.
Yeah, they're absolutely. So, The mechanics were all there for Ricardo to take that sub. So the other round robin match is Hudson Mateus subbing Jonathan Gracie by straight ankle. So they start off doing a leg exchange, and just don't fucking try to footlock Team Kyoterra. Like, we've learned this, like, especially, like, they
look
are...
At Mikey, look at Mikey, 12 seconds. 12 seconds with the Kyoterra footlock in the World Championships in the finals.
Don't fucking do it. Don't fucking do it. Like, it ain't worth it. They're like the fucking Danaher Death Squad of, like, gi fucking footlocks. Like,
they're really, they just...
They're gonna fucking... Dude, the Kyoterra lock was how Craig Jones fucking, like, ripped Richie...
Yeah, Richie Martinez's foot off in Quintet.
Yeah. So just don't fucking do it. It's such they're so proficient with it. Not that Craig Jones is Team Kyoterra, but it was a Kyoterra lock.
Yeah,
and it's those just dudes
fucking, it's just sneaky,
sneaky,
and
man.
Like they can throw it so well with that inside pressure.
This wasn't a Kyoterra lock. It was a straight ankle lock, and it was super high on the calf. Like it was, no one thought it was gonna happen, and then like you know Hudson just readjusts and just fucking takes it away. Like oh my god. Very, very good example of straight ankle. Like, how awesome leg locks can be in the gi. You know, watch the Kyoterra guys.
Dude, not fight to win. BJJ Scout has been putting a bunch of videos out the past couple of days on, like, saddle entries and in the gi from, like, 2014 and 2015, basically showing, like, why it's not getting DQ'd back then. It's really interesting. They're putting more and more stuff out this week. Go back and watch some of their stuff if you're kind of curious about more leg positioning in the gi.
Yeah,
because it's cool, and they're literally specifically this week focusing on those positions in the gi when it does not result in a DQ, and exactly why it's not resulting in a DQ.
Right. So on to the semifinals. So we have Kanan Duarte defeating Hudson Mateus by points 4-2. This was a like, to be honest, like not a stellar match. It was
Emil wrote bleh at one point in his notes.
Well, it's like. Three penalties each, one of those three penalties each type matches.
Where they go after the third, they kind of both had to start
right
like, picking it up.
And, but I will say what was interesting was on the third, on the second penalty or third penalty, I can't remember which one. UAEJJF initiated a stalling penalty clock on both players,
which was
fucking cool.
Can we talk about how good their overlay is?
I could talk about this all the fucking time, dude. Like, you have both fucking people's names.
Full name, not abbreviation. Like, it says Kanan Duarte. It has his country of origin with his little flag there. It has your advantages, has your penalties, has your time. And then when penalties pop up, two little magical wings pop up on the side of the time that's left in the match and count down for stalling.
Yeah.
On both competitors.
So there's none of this like, ah, the ref's fucking counting quick or blah, blah, blah. It's a fucking digital timer that comes out that you, as the spectator, get to see. And I think that's fucking awesome.
Like, it's amazing.
It was just really, really cool. It takes some of the, like, mystery out of, you know, like, some of these fucking calls. So.
Yeah, because you can see it. Because, again, you're looking, a lot of times it's super hard to tell because the commentary staff has to pick it up. Or because the cameras that you're looking at are looking at the competitors and don't have the ref in the shot. So you can't tell when the ref's begun to call stalling and like why that changes the match. So with this, your camera can be focused on your competitors while you see, oh, the ref has called for stalling, obviously, because stalling. And then the commentary staff can address it. Oh, yeah, the ref's called for stalling here. And it doesn't take you out like, wait, why are they stopping? Oh, they got penalties.
So with three penalties each, they each get awarded two. But Kanan gets an awesome De La Hiva sweep 5 minutes into the match. He extends Hudson out and knocks him over to get the sweep points and win the match. So Kanan progresses to the finals. In the other semifinals match, Joao Gabriel Rocha defeats Jonathan Gracie by points 3-0. And that is, like, criminal.
That is
like,
an undersell of...
It is so fucking good. This match was so fucking good. Jonathan Gracie did amazing. I'm going to be completely honest. I didn't know shit about Jonathan Gracie. I just saw the name
Gracie.
You
texted me, and I was like, who's that? I was like... This is Jonathan Gracie.
Yeah.
We've seen him before. He was like, I don't remember.
I don't remember him at all. Like, he's
very good.
I remember him now, like, for sure. And there's the first thing that you notice in this match is there is a fucking huge size difference. This is like the scene from fucking Game of Thrones where, like, the fucking.
If you spoil Game of Thrones for me, I'll be pissed.
Oh, this is a pretty big spoiler.
Yeah,
so.
Don't spoil what the mountain does to some guy.
From, like, season 4 or something?
Yeah, man, I'm on season 2 still.
Oh, god damn. Hurry the fuck up. But yeah.
I get busy with
there's a
podcasts.
Mountain versus another guy. There's a big fucking size difference there. This is a big fucking size difference. Yeah, Joao Gabriel just fucking dwarfs Jonatas Gracie. Gracie pulls guard. Joao Gabriel does the fucking big guy pressure passing. And he's like scrambling from side to side. And Jonatas times a fucking awesome butterfly sweep.
This is what I was talking about. So basically, Joao Gabriel is trying to like S pass basically and like turn around the legs. And Jonatas Gracie gets onto his back and like elevates immediately under as Joao is jumping over him and is able to change the angle back and flip him back over to his side. It was beautifully timed.
It's absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, it's like a small guy sweeping the shit out of a big fucking, you know, truck.
Big athletic, like quick guy. Because honestly, like, I'm always really impressed how fast Joao Gabriel can move.
Yeah. And like, he definitely, Joao Gabriel does not see the pass. Like, he scrambles.
Yeah.
And, you know, gets back on top. But Jonatas is able to capitalize off of this and throw up a fucking triangle. And, you know, meanwhile, like,
I didn't think the triangle was that close, but it didn't matter because
he didn't
stay with the triangle.
He didn't need to. He was moving several steps ahead of Joao Gabriel Rocha, who's now having to defend. And so it's just an awesome example of attack, and you don't have to worry about being attacked. So Jonatas throws up the triangle. It's a little loose, and Joao comes out. And Jonatas gets to almost like an omoplata position, but then starts rotating through with the armbar, gets a tight, like, sort of like belly down armbar that is like a twisting shoulder lock.
It's basically the one where it's the armbar over the thigh when you're reversed on your opponent. I really can't describe it well.
And it's not, because there are times when the armbar is still an armbar. Like, the mechanics are still an arm bar when you're belly down.
Yeah.
This was like, it was like more like rotating the shoulder, because at this point, Joao Gabriel has to flip.
Yeah, yeah. And what I saw here was, I saw a different arm bar here. So this is cool because you're seeing something different. So it did not look like the shoulder lock version of that to me. It looked like the over the thigh version, which you basically have the wrist controlled in free space over the thigh, and you're doing it like in a levering motion over your thigh.
It definitely might have been that way, but
regardless, Joao Gabriel, because the defense four is the same,
right?
And so he jumps over, and then you realize at that point.
And so now it's a traditional spider web,
and he's deep, and he's like, and Jonatas Gracie has that all the way out, and I was like, yo,
he's
gonna tap Joao Gabriel as the little dude in this, and Joao Gabriel's looked really, really good. And Joao Gabriel, be gangster.
Yeah.
And gets out. Just doesn't, honestly, I don't know if his arm got messed up, but like, didn't tap.
I'm sure it's at the very least sore, because like, you could start to see the hyper extension of the elbow.
Even in the gi, and I was like, oh, that looks deep. That looks rough.
Yeah. Probably in training, he would have tapped to that. Joao Gabriel gets back on top and he starts pressuring, and for several minutes he's just, you know, now at this point it's gravity and time working against Jonatas.
And you saw, like, cool, you got really explosive there. I'm going to slow you down and pressure you.
Yeah.
You do exactly what you need to do against a little guy that throws up active sub attempts and has good transitions. You're like, okay, I got to slow you down. I got to put my weight into you, and I've got to make this like an attritive match, because eventually, as the bigger dude on top, like, I have to wear you out here, and then I can get my points towards the end.
So, yeah, he grinds, Joao Gabriel grinds it out, and he hits an awesome leg weave pass with, like, 30 seconds left in the match to get 3-0 to win that match versus Jonatas Gracie. But holy fucking shit, Jonatas looked good. Like,
oh, yeah.
It just awesome. So then the final match is Joao Gabriel Rocha versus Kanan Duarte.
So we're out of the rounds now. We're back into each bracket.
No, it's just the finals. It's the final match.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, from each group. We finished with the group.
Yeah, yeah,
we're now into the finals itself between both group A and B. Not group A and B, but, like, the final total.
I already talked about the semifinals, so.
Right.
Joao Gabriel defeats Kanan Duarte by penalty point or add. I can't tell. Like, it's listed one way, and then it appears
I think he ends an advantage because it's the last, like, this is a much slower match.
Oh, no, it's boring for basically the whole match, and then the last seconds, there's, like, an ad score.
Yeah, the last second,
Even the commentators are, like, talking about, like, how, oh, these guys are saving their energy for the last, like, the last, you know, seconds will be really exciting. And it was like,
but we saw the same thing in this match at the last seconds. Like, we see João Guerreiro get to the back, and he lifts Kane again and does the exact same takedown. Again, the time had run out as he's taking it down, so he doesn't get takedown points, but he does get the ad for getting to the back and doesn't get the hooks in, but he gets the ad for it. So that's what he wins on. He wins on that advantage.
Fuck yeah.
So, dude, looked good. I am, honestly, now that they're 1-1 with the sub, I'm kind of excited to see these guys meet in another open way. I doubt we'll see these guys in a division because they are not, I think they're two divisions apart.
There's a fucking substantial size difference.
Yeah, but, dude, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, and UAE JJF always brings it. That six-minute match in this format with that money on the line, it's just exciting.
Yeah, dog.
It's just good.
Yeah.
Makes me happy to watch jiu-jitsu.
Every single fucking time. And I will say it's not like every single match is good, there's a lot of good matches.
I would say the proportion, and we've talked about it, like even a bad 6-minute match, in quotes, are bad as high level guys.
Doesn't feel that bad.
It's just like it's 6 minutes. You're like, okay, like I watched, like it wasn't as exciting, but like, okay.
Suck the life out of you the way like others do. So
a bad 10-minute match is like, is long. I can watch 4 bad 10-minute matches in an hour, and I'm like, oh, okay. But
yeah,
like,
that'll just like fucking kill you.
Yeah,
so.
But like you can get through like a bunch of 6-minute matches, and at least a couple of those are going to be like fire. So you got anything else for the King of Mats?
That's it for King of Mats.
So the UAE JJF also ran their like Moscow event, their Grand Slam event.
Yep, it's a huge tournament, all belts, adults, masters.
Not going to lie, I didn't get a chance to watch any of it.
They're huge. You know, so, it's an IBJJF tournament size, so.
So I assume there's some really good matchups. I know like Hudson Tellis won his division. Some other big guys won. It's up. I think all of the mats are up for Flow Grappling, so you can watch that. But we just didn't get a chance to watch it ourselves this weekend with all the other stuff going on. So on to our recap of Fight to Win 115 in Seattle, Washington. This event paid out a total of $31,640 in salvage commissions and was headlined by Natalie Caroline defeating Jessica Flowers via knee bar.
That's Natalie DeJesus. For those of you unfamiliar, but yeah.
I just read the name that was there.
Yeah.
Like in my notes, and it is Natalia Jesus.
Lots of 50-50 or 25-25 guard, whatever you want to call it.
I think that's what we call this position, honestly. We talked about it last week.
Yeah,
they
also got straight up into 50-50 as well. So
yeah, they got there. It's like, but that pre-position before you get into 50-50, before you have both knees like committed, like that middle position.
Double-seated open guard.
Double-seated open guard or 25-25, where it's like you're not quite committed, but you're a quarter way into committing to the 50-50.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of that in this match.
So Natalie is doing a lot of standing passing. Jessica goes for reverse De La Riva without framing, which is just like, I don't know about that. And
it's dangerous.
Yeah. The match ends with the sequence with Natalie cutting through and does a really nice, like getting her knee to the far side to switch her hips for the knee bar, gets her tight grip, gets to her side, like leans to her side with the knee bar grip, then adjusts, gets both legs and just hips into it and gets a tap. Just a little over 2 minutes in, right?
Was it that quick?
It was like 2 minutes and 30 seconds, I think.
Jeez, I thought it was a much longer match than that.
No.
I love this position with the knees because what she does here when she gets, and she starts going for the, sorry, right before she starts going for the knee bar, she's like fighting one leg and then she looks and she grabs the other leg too so that she can't push off and get away from the knee bar, and it's a really, really cool thing, and you see it, it's like half and half. You see it sometimes frequently, and sometimes not frequently, but in Gi, you see it way more that people will grab that other leg for some reason. With the way the reaping works, and the way the knee bar position works, you see that second leg being basketed to stop the defense, and that's honestly one of the things that we're seeing in the BJJ Scout breakdowns this week, is like people are basketing that other leg.
Yeah.
In that position, so it's a really cool knee bar, and Natalia DeJesus gets she retains the middleweight championship for a Fight to Win.
So then we have Michael Liera Jr. defeating Hugo Marquez by decision. We have Manuel Hibamar defeating Gabriel Almeida by decision. Brian Johnson defeats Jeff McCattagai by decision. Bruno Bittencourt defeats Josh Calvo by decision. Gustavo Pires defeats Joseph Marchin by armbar. Melvin Rivela defeats Perry Bateson by wrist lock.
Yeah, you are super unconfident with the names this week.
Yeah, there's fucking weird names.
Thanks, Seattle.
Carlos Sievert defeats Alex Lermy by armbar.
And that was submission of the night for the black belts. This was fun.
This
whole
was
sequence was
great.
Fun. This whole match was great.
Yeah, this is like, I love I'm really jealous of people who can do like a really nice high guard. Like,
dude,
high guard
I love that. This was such a cool, like, this is exactly how I set the high guard up in Gi too.
Like,
so it was cool to see it work at a black belt level and get submission of the night with it.
If you want to get good at subs from like close guard, like, you really should be doing high guard. Like,
yes,
high guard is. Close guard is
if you want to get arms. If you want to get arms from close
guard.
Arms,
but you also do triangles. Like it's
that's reasonable.
The high guard is, it's like, you know, it's like the adjustment for a triangle between like a trap triangle and like getting towards more of a submission triangle. Like it's much closer to the submission than the close guard. Like close guard is fine for
retaining
control.
You can tap guys if you do it right. You can tap guys with a high guard position.
Oh yeah,
so
100%.
This is the whole setup here is really cool. So Charlie is basically, sorry, in my notes I messed up the name here. It's
Carlos,
not Charlie. Carlos keeps pulling the lapel out and trapping Alex's arm. He's like the arm that he's going to go for initially. And he keeps like pulling underneath and he keeps grabbing the lapel underneath of the elbow to pull the arm forward. And then once he has it, he keeps reaching with his same side hand and pulling down at the opposite side lapel to break the posture. And eventually, this is what is able to get him into that like high guard position. And he hops it over and it's beautiful work.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a stunning, just, it's so tight. Like Carlos is, it's one of those arm bars where like Alex is trying to posture up and starts like lifting.
Well, he gets to lift once and he gets
Carlos,
to slam.
Yeah, it's not really a slam, but like he lifts Carlos straight up off the mat. And I just love, it looks so iconic when someone has like that hanging arm bar position and it's just so fucking tight. Like it just looks dope. Like there's a lot of jujitsu like imagery with someone doing that,
yeah.
And it just looks fucking awesome. So it was just a great finish, a great armbar finish, definitely deserving of submission of the night.
Yeah, the interesting thing for the commentators picked up. They talked about how dangerous it is when you're in that armbar in that position from the high guard to stand up, because he just throws the leg over and he gets to the arm itself, and then the stand up is super dangerous in the gi.
It just extends the fucking.
Well, because you can in no-gi, you can kind of like slip out a lot of times as I bang into the mic with my shoulder as I make the motion with my hand. You can kind of slip out a lot of times, but in the gi, if a guy has a good bite on that, it's so hard to slip out. And basically, what you're doing is you're just lifting the person up to give you the leverage to swing out with the arm and extend it.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to crush in at that, which is weird because he got into that position because he was crushing in the first.
Yes.
So he did like, he did the exact opposite sequence of what you, like I would try to do. Or
oh, dude, I totally try to stand up and slam the guy out.
What's
I would totally try to do that.
No,
exactly what he did is exactly what I would have done.
I would be posturing like while he was trying to attempt high guard, and then if he got a lock.
I mean, what are you doing with all this technique? I was going to try to lift the guy up and slam him out. I thought it was a completely legit way, and the commentary talked about the drawbacks to it.
Yeah.
But honestly, looking at it, I was like, I would have done that same thing.
Yeah.
So I love this because it's both ends of like, I would have done what Carlos is doing for the armbar, and I would have done what Alex does to defend it. So it's really cool to see. Seth announced that Carlos is actually the next contender for the belt in that division.
Hell
so
he's
the number one contender for that division. So super excited to see Carlos fight for a belt, on his most likely on his next fight to win outing.
So next up, we have Charlie Johnson defeating Casey Stentz by choke.
Dude, he hits him with the Wagner chin strap in this match. Charlie, it's beautiful. He's on the back. He has the body triangle, and he's doing like, it's not the Wagner straight up where it's the straight face. He is grabbing on the like the side of the jawbone and turning him over, and he's able to get it and get the rear naked choke off, and it's really cool. I love seeing guys that fight the face.
Choke the face, man.
Dude, I love it. I just love that. Like it's that, it's not dirty jujitsu, but it's like that like grittier jujitsu where it's like, I'm not really gonna be nice to you. I'm trying to like finish you. I like always appreciate that from competitors. So
yeah.
Charlie gets the choke on that one.
So next we have Nathan Orchard defeating Dustin Akbari.
And that was fight of the night for the black belts. I got super scared you were gonna take my thing.
No, there was a lot of scrambling. This was a very high energy match.
That is one way to put it, Emil.
Yeah,
there was
falling
a
off the mat, like just like weird sideways flying attacks.
So you're talking about the one point when Dustin Akbari pulls guard when Nathan Orchard is not there?
I wouldn't. Yeah, he just kind of like, it's like he does like a pro wrestling like fly kick.
It kind of looked like he was trying to jump guard, or that he was trying to like almost like jump a scissor takedown. But he got overzealous with it and, like, jumped into Orchard, but Orchard kind of wasn't there. And so Dustin Akbari just kind of jumps and then lands onto the mat. And it
lands
was...
on the mat. And this is where, like, Nathan is now, like, on top in combat base.
We're in minutes into the match. This is towards the end of the match.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, like, you know, actually, there's only 30 seconds left at this point. Nathan's in combat base, and he just launches into an awesome knee bar.
He does it from the double unders, too.
Yeah.
Which is really cool, because basically he goes from double unders in that combat base position, and he throws, like, his leg through the center basically when he's in the double under.
Yeah.
And he's able to just scoot over and just get the knee bar. It was really, really impressive, because you don't see guys that are able to get that knee through to go for the knee bar from that position very often.
Right. Yeah, so it's kind of scrambly, sweaty, energetic, frenetic match, you know.
It was fun. I enjoyed it. And yeah. Again, deserved the Friday night for the Black Belts, a lot of action. It was super fun.
Yeah. So then we have Kyle Mitchell defeating Clay Davidson by decision. Joshua Bacallo defeats Hamilton Ash by triangle. Felipe Matos defeats Gerson Atigu by knee bar. Micah Brakefield defeats Matthew Nielsen by decision.
On to the judo results.
David Johnson defeats Artem Chumak by armbar.
My notes just says good armbar. It's his, it's his
main, you're missing something.
And that was submission of the night for the judo black belts. Oh, shit. Go. I got super excited about armbars.
Yeah, it's a fucking great armbar. So David's on top in turtle. He goes to almost like a bow and arrow position and rocks Artem backwards. And he's able to, like, he has the arm control and slink his leg around for a traditional, like, spider web armbar position. And he just starts... Like, it's one of those, like, fucking, like, slow, grueling.
Like, give me the arm.
Give me the fucking arm. And he's just, like, slowly ripping it away from
Artem.
Slowly
takes the grip away, totally takes it away, and then eventually gets the straight out. Yeah. And it's beautiful. I like this match a lot because this, to me, is what I think most Fight to Win judo matches will end up looking like once guys kind of figure it out a little more, where it's like you see some good throws, you see some good groundwork, and none of it looked, like, disconnected. It looks like... This is what I wish judo regularly would look like on, like, the IJF circuit, where it's, like, you see a mix of, like, good action, a good groundwork, but, like, legit throws on both. It was just, like, this was just a good, solid judo match. It wasn't, like, insane crazy, but it was, like, a good match. And this is what I think judo should look like, and I'm really happy that Fight to Win is showcasing this kind of judo.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fucking awesome. So...
The
next match is fucking insane. So it's Maka Yakupin defeating Martin Hanicher 1-0. And
dude, this was fight of the night for the black belts.
This was fucking crazy. Maka, like, I was just trying to Google the name of, like, what's the name of that fucking Russian Greco-Roman?
Karelin?
Yes.
It's in my notes, Emil.
Yeah, Alexei. Oh, is it?
Yeah, Karelin. I spelled it super wrong, but it's there.
Oh, yeah,
so
dude.
Basically, it's the
You and old, I had the same thought. Like,
yeah, it's the old school, if you've ever seen Alexander Karelin, who is a crazy Russian dude that looks like what Ivan Drago was based off of, Karelin hits this five-point throw in wrestling. What it is basically a gut wrench from, like, laying down, and wrestler's going to hate me for this description. And then what he does basically is he does a giant, like, back arch and throws the person over him. And I think in judo, it's called, like, a rice bag throw or something. And I don't remember what the actual name for it is, but it's really, like, uncommon to see hit in this way in judo.
Yeah, it's basically, like, body lock and then... Like, not quite suplex, but, like...
You do, like, a wrestler bridge, but instead of having them, like, chest to back, you have them, like...
It's like sideways.
When they're belly down.
Yeah.
And you throw them like they're a giant, like, sack of rice over you, and he hits it, and he goes for this... Maka
several
goes for this,
times.
He hits it, I think, three times, and he gets the Ippon off one of them. But it was, like, whenever Martin would belly down, Maka would just go, cool, suplex time.
Yeah, it
just
was,
go for it.
It was fucking nuts. But it was actually really exciting, too. Martin was going for a bunch of Morota Seoi Nages. Like,
yeah.
So, you know, it was really fun. It was, like, really exciting match.
Both guys were committing to stuff and willing to, like, not botch the throw is not the right word, but willing to, like, commit on the throw and then go down and then work from the ground and then, like, but there was never this big break in action. Both guys were pretty constantly going for stuff, and I've got some curse words in my notes here, but it was basically, like, if you're not watching Fight to Win Judo, watch this match. This card for the judo matches is why we were so happy initially that Fight to Win started showcasing judo matches, because you get matches like this that are under that different rule set that showcase like how fun and exciting judo can be. There's not stalling. These guys are just going.
Yeah, and by the way, I should briefly describe. The Morote Seoinage is like a drop Seoinage, but instead of grabbing two hands on the arm to try to throw them over your shoulder, you have a collar grip and a sleeve grip.
It's honestly the more common of the Seonage throws, usually.
It is, yeah.
It jacked my shoulder up really bad doing it, because I do it like shit, and I flare my elbow out when I do it.
So it's kind of like the correct judo version of the train wreck throw that we see TLI do a lot.
Similar, but the TLI throw, honestly, is more like a... almost like a snap down sort of, yeah. But this is basically like the same grip, but you do it as you kind of off balance the guy and then drop into position with it. It's a cool throw, but yeah, he's trying to hit that repeatedly, and it's just good grip work, great match overall, deservedly fight of the night for the judo black belts.
Hell yeah.
Like, again, go back and watch both of those matches for the judo results, because they were fun.
So then we have Patrick's Luna Mendiola defeating Pete Schroeder by 2 ippons.
Good throws, a little less groundwork, more standard judo. There's still some good groundwork, but this is a much more standard stand-up judo match.
Right.
On to the brown belt results.
Jai Kennedy defeats John Minshall by decision. Matthew Mahan defeats Cameron McGinnis by decision. Michael Singh defeats Lee Biga by armbar. Carlos Lozoya defeats Austin Dafferin by decision. Sean Weisenbrough defeats Michael Crisp by rear naked choke. Becca Pheasant Rice defeats Carly Rangel by calf slicer.
And that was submission of the night for the brown belts.
Christy Detmer Van Groen defeats Lauren Johnson by armbar.
And that was fight of the night for the brown belts. On to the purple belt results.
Josh Wilkins defeats Jake Hargis by a decision.
Blowing my cues today.
Right?
On everything, man. I don't know what it is.
Josh Ratliff defeats Clinton Ellis by rear naked choke.
And that was submission of the night for the purple belts.
Heta Ferreira Mangaritaville Senra. Holy dude, this fucking card has like the batshit insane names.
I think it's the Facebook names.
Defeats Caleb Germany by split decision.
And that was fight of the night for the purple belts.
Brian Pereira defeats Logan Vieira by decision. Paul Bordeaux defeats Byron Fernandez Jr. by guillotine. Terrence Souza defeats Nathan Oleveg by footlock. Vikram, I can't even.
Come on,
Srivijayan.
That was really good.
Ryan Davis by decision. Katie Egan defeats Ferrari Cardona by footlock. Tyson Lin defeats Daniel Estigoy by triangle. Artyom Kula defeats Danny Fellers by armbar. Donovan Potar defeats Ron Boutillier by knee bar.
No, you're right, I'm wrong. Right.
Liam Nguyen defeats Gordon Chen by decision.
And that was fight of the night for the purple belts. On to the blue belt results.
Dylan Melton defeats Luke Ellis by decision.
And that was fight of the night for the blue belts.
Richard Anthony defeats Nicholas Merritt by rear naked choke.
And that was submission of the night for the blue belts. On to the kids and teens results.
Jace Matengay defeats Bodhi Sameta by flying armbar.
And that was the fastest submission in Fight to Win history. 4 seconds, submission of the night for the Keens and teens and kids. This was a 4-second flying armbar. It was 4 seconds. Exactly what, like, it can't be any 4 seconds. It can't be anything else.
That's right.
The match starts. Jace walks over, jumps the flying armbar, and hits a flying armbar, and that's the match.
There you go.
There's highlights all over Instagram and. That's the match. It was good. It was impressive. I'm always excited to see what kids that can do this at this age and can kids and teens look like when they move into the adult divisions.
We have Gordson Gibson defeating Gavin Higley by decision.
And that was fight of the night for the kids and teens.
Woo!
On to the next one. A great event. Lots of fun. Highly recommend you go back and watch at least the matches that we talked about, because it was a lot of fun. So moving on to the preview section of the show, remember we have the interview with Ryan McGuire of Third Coast Grappling at the end. We're going to preview that event last, so that it basically goes from the Third Coast Grappling preview right into that interview, so definitely stick around and listen to that. So kicking it off, we're going to preview the Midwest finishers to the Welterweight Championships. This one takes place on June 22nd and starts at 6 p.m.
Central.
CST? What is that? Central Standard Time. This event features a welterweight 170-pound championship bracket that has some... a lot of fun names on it. They do their EBI rules, sub only 10-minute rounds.
It's 20 20-man bracket with a $2,500 cash prize.
Money.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. There's a lot of fucking talent on here. We have William Tackett, who we've covered a fucking bunch. You know, ADCC West Coast Trials runner-up. That's fucking huge.
That's huge.
Yeah. Michael John.
You also skipped over the IBJJF Nogi World Champion bit there as well. I know how you feel about the IBJJF, but still, it is kind of an accolade that's important.
Yes, it is.
His brother's also on the event, too, in the Super Fights. Yeah. We'll talk about him in a minute here.
Michael John is a Fight to Win veteran. He's been on a bunch of other Super Fight organizations.
We have Michael Carpenter. He's been on. He's the finisher. He's been on Finishers 1.
Finishers 5, yeah. So David Garmo was on Quintet and actually was the champion for Quintet Fight Night 1 and 2, which is fucking huge accolades.
He was with Carpe Diem, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Alan Sanchez, also Fight to Win veteran, Gracie Worlds veteran. Lots of promotions that he's been a part of. Mike DeWitt, four-time SUG Submission Underground grappling winner.
Jordan Peitzman is on here.
Yeah,
he's the promoter for Subspectrum.
Yeah,
we've covered his bent a bunch of times.
Yeah, part of on an Invitational as a competitor.
Yeah, been on Ultimate Mat Warriors as well. We have Pierre Oliver Leclerc.
Oh yeah, yeah, the TriStar dude.
He's the dude.
I fucking remember this guy.
He's the dude I think that won the first Kasai qualifier that they ran.
Yeah.
When they ran it for 170. I think that's what he won and how he ended up getting on Kasai. He's also was the Sapateo champion. And like, I think we saw him last week on something we didn't cover. He was competing and he did something terrible to a guy. And I watched it and I was very impressed with this performance. We got Tom Higgins.
He's been on Midwest Finishers before in Super Fights. He's been on a Subspectrum, a bunch of other promotions. To Zach Edwards, who we've covered a bunch. We actually saw him at SAGC.
We commentated his match live when he won the welterweight championship for SAGC.
That's right.
I've seen his match live when we were at Finishers as well.
Zach Edwards has fought on It, Sapatero, Finishers Sub Only, Rise.
He's done a bunch of. He's on stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So all it's cool to see him in this because he's a veteran on that Super Fight scene. So it's cool to see him on the card as well.
And part of that big 10th Planet Bethlehem family. So
yeah.
Alexander Rajasic.
Rahajic.
Yeah. On Metamoris, Challenger, Subspectrum, bunch of stuff.
Bunch of other stuff. Fight to Win. We have Christian Goli. He's been on EBI 17, Finisher Sub Only 8.
Werther Marcialis, also been on Jacksonville Invitational, Sapateros 5 times, and was also in part of Sapateros kind of like quintet style event.
Yep.
We also have Mike Kachikian.
That was terrible.
Kachikian.
I'm so sorry, Mike. I apologize. I've seen his name before. I've heard his name before. I cannot say it in my head. He's right, check, Matt.
Oh yeah, yeah. Khalil Fadala, Justin Falk, Levi Hall, Isaac Underwood. And then we have a bunch of super fights too. 135 pound purple belt, Chris Crawford versus Patrick Gatbunton. We have 130 pounds open rank, Christine Campbell versus Nabila Martinez. 155 pound open rank, Andrew Tackett, brother of the previous Tackett,
William Tackett,
and versus David Garcia. 180 pound brown belt, Cody Steele versus Chris Sangoli. 145 pound black belt match, Aaron Brooks versus Aaron Morris.
That event looks like a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun last time. Again, the production quality was really good. They're running it on YouTube. It's free. Watch it. It runs on the Midwest Finishers YouTube page, and it's a lot of fun. I highly recommend you check it out. Guys are going to win some money. So on to our preview of Fight to Win 116 in Richmond, California. Not Richmond, Virginia, like I said last time they were in Richmond. This event is main evented by a 215-pound black belt gi match, Tanner Rice versus Helton Jose Jr.
Yeah, it's huge, right? You know, at Tanner Rice, we've seen a bunch. And we've seen
Helton Jose, we've seen a bunch, too.
Yeah, UAE, JJF. We've seen him worlds just all over the place.
Now, next, in the co-main event, we have a 155-pound black belt masters gi title.
It's Marcos
Torregrossa,
thank you.
I got you, Emil.
Versus Pete Schumacher.
I know like 8 names, and Torregrossa is one of them. We have a 255-pound black belt gi match.
Daniel Ripper versus Jamison Cummings.
We have a 200-pound black belt gi match.
Clydeson Ramos versus Jason Butcher.
195-pound black belt gi match.
Mauricio Alonso versus Renato Pizarro.
185-pound black belt gi match.
Gustavo Andrade versus Benny Hosha.
185-pound black belt gi match.
Nick Green again versus Nathan Mendelson.
That should be a lot of fun. We have 180-pound black belt no gi bout.
Dom Hoskins again versus Adam Dunkel.
We have 135-pound black belt gi match.
Juan Souza versus John Erickson.
170-pound black belt gi match.
Luis Campos versus Igor Estrella.
Can we just talk about how crazy every time these guys go to Northern California and every time they go to Florida, how crazy and stacked these black belt matches are?
Yeah, it's fucking, it's nuts.
170-pound black belt gi match.
Oh, we just got that one.
165-pound black belt gi match.
Sean Nicomarad versus Thomas Hallett.
155-pound black belt no gi match.
Andrew Fonseca versus Thiago Gaia.
165-pound judo match.
Fabricio Silva versus August Meissner.
205-pound brown belt no gi match.
Stefano Gomez versus Renato Valente.
And there's a bunch of other matches all throughout this card that are brown belts. There's purple belt matches. And again, it is a lot of fun. If you watched Fight to Win last week, like the Cali cards, bring it. I know last week was not in Cali, but it was still that Pacific Northwest area. Like, dude, Fight
West
to Win.
Coast, yeah.
West Coast puts on some dope cards. Highly recommend you watch it. June 22nd starts at 8:30 p.m. So on to our preview of SAGC Redemption that takes place on June 23rd, 2019 in College Park, Maryland. There's a couple tickets left. We are doing commentary for this one, Emil.
Yeah, and Josh is competing on it, too. It's gonna
no,
be
he's
fucking...
not. He's out.
Oh, he's out.
He's injured now.
Oh,
did
shit.
Did you not get the message?
I did not see that. Well... There's one injury. Josh Weinsock is fucking injured.
I like how that Emil is just finding this out now.
Yeah.
What's up, Emil? Really, Mr. Current Events on the show right now.
Yeah. Oops.
Josh. So he's been replaced. But yeah, really excited to do commentary for this event. We did commentary for the last event, SAGC 7. It was a lot of fun. That's why we're there doing it again. Super excited to preview this one. I've done a much more extensive write-up this time, so hopefully the commentary is going to go a little more smoothly. This one is going to be happening at 3 p.m. on Sunday this weekend, so tune in. It should be on the SAGC Facebook page, and then it should be cross-linked to our page as well, so hopefully it goes off without a hitch. Super excited to do this one. Let's move in the main event. We have Andrew Cockle. It's going to be Andrew Cockle versus Rob Best, but Sean Ashley has replaced Rob Best because Rob Best had an injury coming into this one. So super exciting. Love watching Andrew compete. And I'm not as familiar with Sean, but he's got up with some stiff competition for Andrew. I think Andrew is 12-1 on SAGC.
Yeah, and that one loss being to Mateus Lutis, like in a 19-minute fucking overtime grueling match, you know. So it's... Yeah.
That is a hell of a main event.
Yeah.
Like, that is going to be great. In the 10-man, 155-pound bracket, so this will actually determine who gets the shot at the belt for 155 for SAGC 8. So Villanueva was actually the champion previously. He's going to give up that belt. He's going to enter into the bracket to basically earn his spot again to fight for the belt at SAGC 8. So in this matchup, in this bracket, we have...
Mike Villanueva, Matt Vovery, Chris Hurl...
Dvovery,
Chris Hurl, Quinn Poirier, Andrew Solano, Saya Webb, AJ Descani, John Lyons, Craig Feldman, Andrew Valencia.
So it's I'll have a 10-man bracket because it's nice and compact. We just saw this last weekend for UAEJJF.
Yep.
Like it's a good size and usually runs. So this is all in the endurance format. So the endurance format for SAGC is... It's
3 5-minute rounds.
Yeah, 3 5-minute rounds, and then you basically, in order to win, you have to sub your opponent at least once. So basically, it fosters these guys going after it, because if you lose like one round, you still can take the other round. So it typically fosters like guys really going out there and actively hunting for the sub, for it.
Yep.
So this is every match on this card is in that endurance format.
So on the bracket we have. Anderson versus Solano.
In the first matchup.
Webb versus Lyons.
The second matchup.
Villanueva versus Hurl.
In the third matchup. That's actually in the fifth matchup, but my bad.
Poirier versus Dvovery.
In the third matchup.
Feldman versus Descani.
In the fourth matchup. So then, again, the winner of that gets the SAGC 8 title match. On the undercard, we have Eric Naples versus Rafael Picardo. We have Kobe Rowland versus Rene Souza. We have Ellis Karadag versus Robert Daigle. We have Jules Knighton versus Dante Muschamp. We have Nathan Krislip versus Rashid Perez. We have Vic Kuhner versus Edwin Albino. We've seen Edwin a bunch on Fight to Win. We have Mario Picone versus Nicholas Rodriguez. And
That's Ramirez, but yeah.
I was close, man.
Yeah, it was fucking great.
And replacing Josh Weinstock, we have Desmond McDonald versus Tom Sellemeyer. So this event's going to be a lot of fun. Listen to all of us on commentary live. Again, I'm super excited to do this.
It was a ton of fun last year.
Dude, I love doing commentary, and this event looks like so much fun because that tournament, and again, even some of the super fights, like, look like they should be awesome matchups. It's always a really interesting format to commentate on with that multiple round setup, and I'm super happy that we're able to do it live this time.
Fuck yeah.
So on to the next one. So on to our preview of Rise Invitational 7. This takes place on June 21st and is on UFC Fight Pass.
Yeah, this is a studded fucking card. So we have Josh Berkman
versus... It's a really heavy MMA card.
Yeah, it's true. But, I mean, there's also a lot of really good jiu-jitsu on there. So
oh, yeah.
Josh Berkman versus Pete Sell. Chris Camozzi versus Gian Valente. Adam Colarile?
That's actually not a meal misreading it. That's the text is very difficult to read over top of the overlay we're looking at.
Versus Dennis Bermudez. Then we have Carlos Rosado versus Frank Rosenthal.
And he's the current champion for Rise, I think. I want to say it was 35, but I think it's 45.
We've seen Frank on a bunch of stuff, too.
At a bunch of different weights.
I think Kasai and like...
Finishers, yep. Kasai.
Yeah. And
bunch of stuff.
Deep runs at ADCC as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
trials.
Then we have Zach Manzlani versus Joao Miao. We have
that's a good matchup. That's a tough matchup for Zach, but he's fun. He usually is a lot of fun to watch. Joao Miao has been looking real good, taking second place. Was it which one? Now he took first place to the Worlds.
Yeah,
he closed out with Cicero Costa.
Yes.
In the massive in Emil's favorite division of the Worlds this
that's
year.
That's right.
So world champion. That's a stiff matchup. And then we have
fucking Ray De Leon versus Sergio Da Silva as well.
So that's a lot of fun. That's just the main card. The undercard is on there. Rise is usually a lot of fun because they usually use a bunch of different rule sets.
And not only that, but like Fight Pass makes it super easy to watch. It's like. Makes it, you know, match by match, see where the
submission attempts are, where the takedowns are, where the restarts are, where the rounds are. It's has awesome. A very, very good format to watch stuff in. So
agreed.
Very easy to watch. So onto our preview of the Third Coast Grappling, their third event. This is their second major event that they've run. They've run a qualifier event, and this is their stacked second main event and major event. And man, it is stacked.
This is fucking crazy. So where do you want to start, main? Like
let's start from the top. I mean,
all right.
Let's start with Cyborg Abreu replacing Keenan Cornelius versus Nicholas Mergali. We talked about this a little bit last week, but this is a tough matchup for Cyborg because I see this is a 7-minute match. I see Mergali having a bunch of different paths to victory here, and a lot of them end in sub, especially in the gi. Again, Mergali has looked so dominant. He's the current world champion.
He just fucking subs his way through goddamn everybody. He subbed.
Anyone that can sub Kanan Duarte
is
a world beater right now.
Yeah.
And
or fucking, like, goddamn Muhammad Ali in the finals.
I just forgot about that. Yes. Yeah. You sub Muhammad Ali, which, again, is probably a similar body style to Cyborg. I think Muhammad Ali is probably a bit bigger and taller than Cyborg.
I have nothing. No indication that it's going to go any other way than Mergali.
Dude,
by
Mergali
sub.
Is such a hard guy to beat. But again, we saw Keenan trip him up in the gi a little bit.
I think there's nothing more to say.
Man, it's tough.
That's it.
It's tough. Oh, yeah. So the co-main event is also another amazing matchup. We have Craig Jones
versus Mateus Diniz. And actually, that's a rematch. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. It was a little bit slower when we saw it the first time. But
event did we see that on?
Oh, God.
Was it Kasai?
I can't
putting you on the spot.
Remember.
I'm here in a big way.
I don't think it was Kasai. It might have been Polaris.
I think, dude. Craig Jones is on so much stuff.
He's
recently.
On. He's on everything. It was a slow match. It was one of the first times that we saw Craig Jones really get kind of like shut down. Or it was in that like those many
was
matches that he
Fest?
Had. I can't remember, but like there were many matches that he had in a row where he got shut down, and people had kind of gotten wise to the
to the saddle energy that he was using, and
exactly,
then he kind of had to switch it up
from
knee
shield. And Mateus Diniz kind of like shut him down. So hopefully, those guys both seem like they felt bad about how that match went. I see it going a lot more energetically this time around.
We've also seen Craig switch up his game a little bit recently and really start to be a little more active in some of those positions. We've seen him pathing to the back a lot more than he was before. He's spending more time at the DDS and like the blue basement. So
we'll see how
this
it goes.
This is a good matchup. Oh, the co-main event. What do you call the third from the top?
Yeah, I don't know.
Edwin Najmi versus Johnny Grippo.
Yeah, that's going to be a fucking huge
in
match. It's a no-gi.
I can read, apparently. Yeah. No-gi.
this whole fucking card is stacked because, like, it's hard to spend much time on each individual match because the match after that is Wagner Hosha versus Ethan Krelliston.
So, by the way, the top six guys on that card, aside from Magali and Cyborg, are all on ADCC.
Yep. Yeah.
All of your guys.
This is a preview of ADCC, basically.
Basically, on the same divisions. Like, yeah. That's amazing. Like, Edwin Najmi versus Gianni Grippo is, like, that's a match anyone could take. Grippo's looked really, really good. We've seen him crack the top. We've seen Najmi be there repeatedly. Like, yep. That's an amazing matchup. Plus, Wagner Hosha versus Ethan Krelliston.
Yep.
Like, this is going to be an action-packed match. We saw Ethan Krelliston put on one of the fastest-paced matches versus Ashley Williams and Polaris like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and Krelliston just fucking ran through the goddamn ADCC trials,
for
too.
The East Coast trials, probably like back in November of last year.
Yeah.
Like, and he's looked good. He's looked super active, and Wagner was Mr. Competition in 2017, 2018.
Yep.
He's taken his foot off the gas a little bit, but that dude never has a slow match, so like that's for sure going to be fireworks. I could headline almost any other card.
Oh yeah,
on a regular day, but this is not a regular day. This is Third Coast Grappling 3.
So we have Marcelo Azevedo versus Gilbert Burns.
Dorino,
yeah,
former world champion.
We have Lucas Valente versus Marcio Andre. We have fucking Kit Dale versus Gabriel Arges. Mike Perez versus Jackson Souza. Nina Mura versus Andressa Sintra. Hunter Newton versus Manuel Hibamar. Jordan Holly versus Marvin Castell.
I'm super excited about
that's
that.
That's gonna be a fucking that's a sleeper a match.
That's gonna be a footlocky footlock battle. I have an inclination that like that one could be like low key fireworks, and a lot of guys, somebody's gonna go home with a leg on that one.
Fucking Ignacio Neto versus Vinicius Ferreira and Cody Steele versus DJ Jackson at the bottom of the fucking black belt.
And on the main
super fight,
that's the last black belt fight on the main card. There's some undercard black belt matchups as well, but on the main card, that's your opening black belt match. Yeah. Is Cody Steele versus DJ?
Oh, Jackson. Dude, brown belt. I just saw this. Pedro Mourinho versus Roberto Jimenez. Roberto
right?
Jimenez, we've been seeing a fucking
dude,
lot.
Dude, this is the event. Third Coast Grappling was the event that like really I knew about Roberto Jimenez last. I knew we watched him for probably a couple years now, but he came out aggressive, and he was one of the highlights of the last card that Third Coast ran, or for their first event.
Check this out. William Tackett is also in this card.
Uh-huh.
So he's doing back-to-back fights in the weekend. Mm-hmm. That's fucking crazy.
That's what you do. We've seen Craig Jones do it. I mean, if you want to be on that competitive grappling scene, what you're going to do.
Just take fucking...
I think Pedro Moreno just got brown, too. He was a purple belt. We saw him as a replacement on, was it Kasai, I think? He was in that tournament, and he's looked really, really good. Again, this is an amazingly exciting event, and this is why we wanted to interview Ryan, and so you can hear that interview like right after this preview. But any other matchup you want to talk about, then we could spend probably a whole show.
These names are so big that we could spend time speculating about how they're going to go. But it's just, you know, I don't know where to begin. Like, these matches are all incredible.
Yeah.
So
super excited to watch. Definitely tune in to watch. It's going to be a really, really good weekend of jiu-jitsu, and I am very, very excited to be a part of it and to be able to watch all of it.
Hell yeah.
So we got Ryan McGuire here from Third Coast. Ryan, are you the president of Third Coast Grappling?
Yeah, I'm the president and founder, and I do the matchmaking as well, along with my partner Zach, and then another partner Jim, and then we have our staff as well. So, president, matchmaker,
kind of jack of all trades. So there's a couple things I want to talk to you about, specifically leading into the Third Coast. I know you guys had the card replacement where Keenan dropped out due to the rib injury that he had at Worlds, and he's now been replaced with Cyborg versus Margali in your main event. There's some other great matches on the card. How did you come up with the rule set for Third Coast? That's one thing. We see a lot of different events on our show and our staff. We cover a lot of different events, and we really appreciated and kind of liked the rules that Third Coast has. How did you guys come up with that?
When we started this thing, it was kind of like, hey, let's get together. I sent a mass message out to about 15 people that I considered, you know, friends or people that, you know, I'd want to work with in business. And one of them was my professor, Brandon Mullins, multiple time Nogi world champion, world masters champion. I mean, if you've been in the game a while, you know about him. But he was one of my main professors under Professor Dracolino. And he came out to one of our first meetings. And one of the things I said was, you know, I don't like the current climate with a lot of these events, because I think the rules really prohibit jiu-jitsu from being what it could be. You know, it could be an a spectator sport. It could transcend past the practitioner like us and, you know, the family that goes. I mean, people that don't train don't get it. So if you're expecting family and friends and all these other people to come out and sit through a 10-minute, highly technical 50-50 match and not want to claw their eyes out, I mean, that's just kind of, you know, that's high expectations. But we saw an opportunity to come in and try something different. My professor had brought up, some rules from the old Gracie challenges where I think it was like, or Gracie tournaments back in the day where I think it was first to submission or 12 points. And he said they were really action packed. So we kind of looked at that because I really like the ADCC rule set as well. So we kind of looked at that, kind of looked at the IBJJF thing so that we can, so that we could cater to the IBJJF crowd. But also we looked at the sub only and what they were doing as well and kind of applied to them. And then we came up with first to 11 points or submission would be the ways to finish the fight. With multiple things built into it. We have yellow cards. I mean, if you get two yellow cards and then a third one, you lose 50% of your purse. Everything from
kind of like the old Pride rules.
Yeah, and I love Pride as well. So, I mean, it's, anything from that on down to our submission bonuses. Everybody, no matter your age, no matter your rank, no matter what, if you submit your opponent within regulation, I'll give you $250. And then, we had a nine-year-old at the first of 3CG that walked out with like $900. So, I mean, we don't do kids matches anymore, but, the ones that we did do, they really did great. And it was a great showcase, but our rules were mainly just built around excitement, from the size of the mats. You watch the UFCs when they used to have the smaller cage, it was a lot more exciting than some of the ones with the big cages. Or if you watch, any sort of grappling event, they have these gigantic mat spaces on like these gigantic areas, it looks cool, but it also allows people to kind of, move around and stall, or just not really press the action that they should be. You put a couple of tigers in a small cage compared to a couple of tigers in a gigantic cage. In a smaller cage, you're going to get action a lot quicker than you would if you let them circle each other and roam around and do their own thing. So if you put the rules in place, the financial incentive, the time limit, the mat space, everything that we've kind of built into it, not to mention, our overtime as well. After, if nobody gets a submission or 11 points, we go into our overtime, which we kind of crafted, which is it's a first point or submission. You flip a coin. Person who wins a coin toss picks the position, guard, back, or side control. And then the other person picks top or bottom. So it's a strategic, play. So if, you get to overtime, all bets are off. It's like, hey, you better be ready to, possibly play a game that you're not used to playing. And so that's another incentive to finish it within regulation, within our rule set. So they go in, nobody gets a point or submission in 5 minutes. Then a judge's decision is rendered. And that was something we wanted to do, was have finality in all our matches. No draws, no, split decisions. We just want finality. Like, if these guys are going to come out here, we're paying them good money, they're going to come out here and compete. They want to have, they want to have the finality to their matches. They want to have some sort of closure. They don't want to walk around with draws or, hanging over their head, or, a split decision that might have been, from a couple of judges that maybe weren't as well versed as they should be. We try to take away all of that and just let the fighters kind of control their fate.
So, about your event as well, you talked about the mat size being smaller. You also have a wall as part of your arena. And last time, I think that's one of the first times, at least in a while, aside from cage grappling, that I've seen an event that's a mat-based grappling have a wall. How'd you guys come up with that? And then moving forward for this second event, what is the rule surrounding the wall? How does that work?
Well, I mean, the wall, to be honest with you, we started out at a smaller venue just to try and work the kinks out, see if this thing was even viable. And the wall was just part of it. I mean, the stage was perfect sized. But it was like, the wall kind of, if we weren't able to use the wall, we were going to like, hey, this wall's there. It's just right in the middle. It's not really, people are just kind of moving around it, or we're going to have to break them up and pull them off. So we just decided to say, hey, use the wall. If you want to work off of it, work off of it. And then we'll just see how it goes. And it was okay. But it's not something we're probably going to pull out for the next ones.
Okay. That was just really interesting the first time you guys were in your event. So who are you looking to get for future, if you can talk about it, who are you looking to get on future events on Third Coast?
I mean, the sky is the limit. I mean, the trend lately seems to be putting, MMA guys on grappling cards and seeing how that goes. But, our goal is to still put on high profile. I mean, Felipe Pena, I mean, we have all these, I mean, we want big game. Gordon Ryan, I mean, he'll be in town for this. I mean, we want to bring the best guys down to Houston and put a show on for not just our scene, but for the world. I mean, I truly believe in our brand and what we can do. And I think with the best athletes in the world on our cards, it's just going to continue to showcase their talents, but also really build up that grappling can be exciting. It can be a spectator sport. It has viability outside the practitioner. And I think if our rule sets continue and the performances keep continuing on our cards, I mean, we're coming up on our third event. The first two, we had over 80% sub, over 80% sub ratio.
That's so, really good. Yeah, I think the first one, I saw was real action packed. Guys really came at the beginning, pushed the action, and I think you've done a bunch of things that help foster people pushing the action, and it's awesome. So how can people watch your event coming up?
They can do it live and in person at Warehouse Live here in Houston, Texas. Just about sold out, but I think there's still a few tickets left, or you can watch it on Flow Grappling. It'll start at about 7 p.m. will be the first match, and then we'll go probably right up to 11:30 or so or midnight. I mean, it's going to be – I mean, I'm working on the actual timeline right now, and it's unreal the amount of talent that is going to be stacked back to back to back. I mean, most people aren't even going to be able to, you know, get up to go to the bathroom. I mean, it's going to be high-profile match after high-profile match after high-profile match. It's going to be unreal. Like, nothing that grappling's ever seen. I mean, Kasai, they're great at what they do. Fight to Win, a lot of respect for Seth and what they do. You know, and, those guys kind of paved the way. At least Fight to Win did. Kasai, you know, those guys are still relatively new too. But guys like Fight to Win and some of these other events, they really paved the way. Polaris, even Metamorphs in a way. I mean, Metamorphs kind of set the standard for the grappling super fight. I mean, take away some of their issues. But, you know, we come out and we want to have as big a cards as we can and put on exciting matches. That's really what we want to do.
Awesome. Hey, Ryan, really appreciate your time, and we're looking forward to the event. So, Amit, what's up? Are you ready for the fire that is next weekend?
Oh, my God, yeah. It's
You're on the show Monday. Please tell me you're on the show Monday.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. I was hoping, like, oh, I'm out of town. I'm like, no, Emil, there's too much shit to cover. We actually had to bring on either, like, one of the other analysts on the team because there's so much stuff to cover.
Yeah.
Because, dude, we have two events on Friday. We got Rise and Third Coast on Friday. We're going to watch those simultaneously, two different streams, two different services. We have Midwest Finishers. We have Fight to Win. We have King of Mats on Saturday. And then on Sunday, we have SAGC.
Yeah.
So strap in. It is going to be a jiu-jitsu-filled weekend. I am already getting tired thinking about it. I'm like realizing that we're going to do commentary most of the day Sunday.
Right.
And then pop into recording on Monday, because there's no way we can record Sunday after all of that.
No.
It's going to be a Monday recording, which means I'm going to be editing basically Sunday for SAGC and then pop right back into Monday and edit the show and get the show on Monday.
Hell yeah.
So it's going to be a great week. Again, if you haven't gotten, if you're this point in the show on Monday, on Tuesday, the patch contest might have been closed, but if you can get in there and put your name in, you know, you might get a chance to win a Grappling Rewind patch. What else you got going on this meal?
That's it, man. Jiu-jitsu. Fucking jiu-jitsu, dude. That's what I got.
Jiu-jitsu.
That's right.
So, I'm excited. So, as always, I'm your host, Maine, joined by co-host
Emil.
And we are the Grappling Rewind. We will see you on the mats. If you like the show, please consider sharing it on Facebook with the folks at your gym. It's the best way that we grow the show, and we really appreciate it. You can reach out to us on email.
We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Google+.
Until that shuts down.
We have a website.
If you have an event you would like to have us cover, please let us know. If you have a name, like most people do, and you'd like to have us stop butchering it,
let us know.
Reach out to us. The show is also available on YouTube, Spotify, in addition to iTunes and every other podcast service. We very much appreciate your time, and thank you.